UK Wine Show, show number 220. Wickham Vineyards with Joe Novak. Hello and pip pip to you all out in Podland, my best English voice. My name's Chris Scott and welcome to this week's UK Wine Show. Well, the house is starting to take shape. We've done the first floor now. We've lowered the ceilings and it's all been plastered up. Just doing some last fitting up in the house, so the old house is starting to look good. Jane's coming back next week on Wednesday, so hopefully I'll have everything painted by the time she gets back. Next on to finishing the loft. But that's enough about my domestic loft development going on there. This week we're going to be talking with Joe Novak from Wickham Vineyards. Wickham Vineyards bought out 14 Threshers stores when Threshers went down last year, and they've positioned themselves quite interestingly in the market with multiple income streams. So we're going to be finding out about how Wickham Vineyards' business is structured, where they get their income, and how it runs. It's quite an interesting little vineyard. As usual, we've got a great show lined up to you, and we're going to be starting off this week with our mystery grape variety. As usual, I'm going to give you a clue now, give you a clue just before the interview, and I'm going to give you the answer at the end. So the first clue in our mystery grape variety is a pink-skinned variety that produces a headily scented and full-bodied white wine. It's cultivated in most parts of the world, although mostly grown in Alsace and France, whereas designated a noble grape variety. Its origins are Italian, though, so it's a French grape variety that's from Italy. It was first noted in the village of Tremino, in what is now known as the Italian Tyrol, in the region known as Alto Adige. Wines from this variety are generally marked with high alcohol, often coupled with low acidity. That's a key hallmark of the grape variety, which means that cool climates can do it a lot of flavours. Obviously, cool climates, normally you've got problems with high acidity, low alcohol. So in a cool climate, it works quite well. Hence its success in countries such as Germany, Austria, and more recently in New Zealand. Its natural high levels of sugar also make it ideal for making sweet, late harvest wines in sunnier years. The best can age for decades. Have we ponder about that? I'll give you another clue for this grape variety later on in the show. But next up, we have the news. And this week, I'm not reading the news. Jane's not back, but I have roped Catherine Jevons. Catherine works in the office here at 3050, doing all our stock control. And she also writes some of the news articles for Jane. So next up, we have the news with Catherine.
The Scottish Government has retreated from its proposals to set a minimum price on alcoholic drinks. During a cross-party summit on alcohol this week, opposition parties rejected the Health Minister Nicola Sturgeon's idea to include a sunset clause in its alcohol bill that they hope would allow for a trial of minimum pricing over a set period. Instead, Scotland's opposition parties are campaigning for a ban on the sale of below-cost alcohol and to increase duty levels. After the summit, Sturgeon said the Scottish Government has proposed minimum pricing as the most effective way of tackling alcohol misuse. Signalling her change of stance, she added, however, following today's meeting, we will consider any workable alternatives and as a result have asked the opposition parties to submit further details on what they have proposed today.
The Scottish Parliament, along with supermarkets, are running the line that duty plus VAT is what the minimum pricing of wine should be, the idea being that that is the minimum cost. In actual fact, wine costs a lot more than that, and if they added things like shipping costs, fruit, the cost would be a lot higher. The thing that they're trying to do is set a pricing that is transparent and auditable. Whether that's the true minimum pricing or not, certainly you wouldn't want to sell your wine for the cost of duty plus VAT, unless you're obviously doing a deal with the supermarket. One group of people who certainly won't be buying wine at minimum price is the government. What's going on there, Catherine?
Well, interestingly, since February, Tom Watson, the former Labour Defence Minister, has been demanding the Foreign and Commonwealth Office reveals full details of its wine cellar, including the cost of bottles being purchased. Watson has so far discovered that almost £18,000 has been spent topping up the reserves since the 12th of May alone, bringing the total value of goods held to £864,000. Although the total value is known, Watson is seeking clarification on whether the cellars are being filled with cheap bottles or fewer, more expensive vintages. The Foreign and Commonwealth Office is citing the coming visit of the Pope to strengthen its ongoing opposition to disclosing the contents of its wine cellar. The FCO has so far resisted the call to disclose the cost of specific vintages bought by its hospitality department, citing commercial confidentiality and the need for the department to maintain relations with its suppliers. The Protocol Directorate within the Foreign and Commonwealth Office wrote that it is considering in detail the public interest tests relating to your review and the other points you raised in your response. However, due to leave arrangements over the summer and detailed preparations for the visit to Britain by His Holiness the Pope, who obviously drinks a lot of wine, it is most unlikely that the Deputy Director of Protocol will be able to write to you before the end of August. The government has confirmed it has the information in digital format.
As Catherine said, that's £18,000. That works out, if you spend about 10 quid a bottle, which is not a bad price for a wine, that's 1,800 bottles. Quite a bit of plonk there for the Pope to get through. I'm sure he's going to have a big mess going on. In actual fact, I think the issue here isn't so much whether the Pope's coming or not. That's just a smokescreen. I think the key issue here is whether the government sellers are going to get a 30, 40% cut that they've been saying all over the whole civil service, or whether the Tories like a bit of first growth. What's the last story, Catherine?
Next up, major sherry producers in illegal cartel. Nine major sherry and the official trade associations have been fined for breaching competition rules. Spain's National Competition Commission, the CNC, fined the group a total of €6.7 million after it obtained evidence of anti-competitive practices. Between 2001 and 2006, several of sherry's major wineries established a cartel to control the output and the price of sherry to be exported to foreign distributors of buyer's own brand in Germany, the Netherlands and Great Britain. These are the three biggest markets by far for such wines, but the prices have been so low and the big volume sherry market is in such a parlous state that presumably if there had not been some sort of price fixing, the wine might have been virtually given away. Even today, 4 years post-cartel activity, Tesco are selling their, for instance, own label sherries such as Fino for barely £4 for a 75 centilitre bottle, including duty and VAT at 17.5%, leaving pathetically little for the wine itself. So, own label sherry offers wine lovers some of the best value in the world. The CNC learned of the alleged misconduct because one of the members of the cartel grassed the others up and decided to inform on them. Those fined are appealing, and the trade association is arguing that these penalties will penalise the thousands of families who depend on sherry, that may be you, already in grave crisis for their living. The CNC described the cartel's actions as a very serious violation under competition law in Spain and in the EU.
It's a shame that the families who work in the vineyards are going to be penalised, and they will be penalised a wee bit by this, although if you think about the pricing, it's not going to drop that much more, there's not much more to go. The problem is, though, have they been artificially been helped by this cartel, in which case the consumer's been missing out. Thanks very much, Catherine. Didn't she do a good job? Right, yeah, next up we have our spotlight. And if you recall, we're doing a wee series on how to spot a blind wine. Last week, we had a look at the grape variety and using the aroma and some of the structural elements to work out what the grape variety was. This week, we're going to take that information, we're going to use the grape variety and also the structural elements to get an idea of the climate that the grapes come from. Now, to determine the climate of the vineyard, grapes grow from cool climates to warm climates to even hot climates, but they typically range over a 30 to 50 degree latitude. This is northern France to the northern tip of Africa. And that 30-50 bands are both in the northern hemisphere and the southern hemisphere. The structure and the aroma of a wine can give you an idea of what type of climate the grapes have been grown in. The cooler the climate, the more likely the wine is to have higher acidity and lower alcohol or sugars. Similarly, wines from hot climates tend to have lower acidity, higher alcohol. In the middle, it depends a wee bit upon the grape variety. Now, acidity is higher in cool climates because of the way the grapes consume acidity. During the day, the vine breathes in carbon dioxide and out oxygen, and it uses the energy from the sun to create sugars, which are stored in the grapes and the roots. In hotter climates, closer to the equator, the sun's intensity is higher, meaning that the grape can produce more sugars the closer you are to 30 degrees, creating a higher sugar, high potential alcohol. As you move to the cooler regions, the sugars do not develop as much. Secondly, in cool climates, it's the nighttime temperature that's important for maintaining acidity. As night falls and the sun goes away, the vine stops photosynthesizing. It still needs energy to live, so it converts some of the sugars it's stored during the day and converts them to energy. To do this, it consumes acidity. And like many chemical reactions, the speed is controlled to some extent by the temperature. Cool nights mean the vine slows down and consumes less acidity. So, wine regions with cooler nighttime temperatures tend to have higher acidity. Based on this, we can look at the acidity, sugar, alcohol levels in the vine to determine the potential climate that the grapes were grown in. Low alcohol, high acidity, and you'd think cool climate. High alcohol, low acidity, and hot climates are the first thought. This is made a wee bit more difficult in the new world where sugar and acidity are added, but at the extremes it can certainly help to identify the climatic conditions. The second thing to consider is grapes have their own climatic range, and at the cool end of their climatic range they'll tend to have higher acidity, lower alcohol. For example, Grenache likes a warm climate, but in an intermediate climate it will produce a higher acidity and relatively lower alcohol wine. I say relatively low, as different grape varieties have their own natural balance of sugar and acidity, and Grenache normally produces wines with high alcohol. But in an intermediate climate, Grenache is always going to be lower in alcohol than in a hot climate, subject to picking times, obviously. Similarly, Sauvignon Blanc tends to be relatively higher in acidity, all other things being equal. So different grape varieties have different structural elements, but on the cool side of their climatic range, they're always going to have higher acidity, and on the hot side, they're always going to have higher sugars. On the website, I'm going to put a list of the different grape varieties and their climatic ranges, so you can use that to have an idea of where they fit in their climatic range, and also the sort of style of wines that they're going to get. In next week's Spotlight, we're going to be looking at aromas and how aromas change with climate. One of the things about spotting a blind wine is you need to have a bit of a library of grape varieties and how they perform. And that will help you spotting blind wines. It'll also help you with our mystery grape variety this week. So here's the second clue in our mystery grape variety. Our mystery variety is a mutation of the Traminer grape, and it's the one that's now the most planted variant. Lychees, rose petals are the characteristics which are most often associated, making it one of the easiest wines to distinguish by its nose alone. For me, it smells and tastes a bit like Torontes, the Argentinian grape variety. But while as Torontes has quite good acidity and lower alcohols, this grape variety, as we said earlier, often has quite low acidity and quite high alcohols. Negatively, it's a relatively low-yielding and erratic yielder, although seemingly the Germans have developed higher-yielding clones. It's exceedingly prone to a variety of viruses and suffers from spring frost because it leaves very early, i.e. the leaves come out quite early in the season. It ripens quite early too and always harvests before Riesling. But it's a good quality grape variety and one that's making a reputation for itself as a food wine, being that it goes particularly well with Thai and Chinese cooking. Hope that's worked it out for you. It's not a difficult one, and once you know the grape variety, you know it for life. But if you don't know it, you're going to be in all sorts of problems trying to guess it. I'm going to give you the answer after the interview, which is coming up next with Joe Novak. As I said at the beginning of the show, Joe works for Wickham Vineyards, and Joe's going to tell us all about how Wickham Vineyards is structured. Let's have a listen to what Joe has to say. Hi, my name's Chris Scott, and I'm here with Joe Novak. How are you, Joe?
I'm really well today, Chris. How are you?
I'm very good indeed. You're from Wickham Vineyards in England.
I am, yes. I'm one of the officers there in the company and looking after couple of the businesses there, and Wickham is doing great things, but I know we're going to talk more about that.
That's right. Do you want to tell us, first of all, where Wickham is, though?
Well, Wickham is between Southampton and Portsmouth. It's just off the M3, and
For overseas people, where's that?
That is south of England, not about an hour and a half's drive out of London, so yep. Very close, and very close to Winchester if you're coming over to visit from overseas.
Okay, and you're a vineyard, obviously.
We're an English vineyard, a thriving vineyard and a growing one, producing from 10 different grape varieties, mainly Germanic grape varieties, and we produce quality English still wine.
Mm-hmm. Not sparkling?
A little sparkling, yes. We have a rosé sparkling, and we're going to produce a champagne, a straight English sparkling wine too, but not in great quantities. Our speciality really is English still wine, our fumé and a very good red.
Okay, your fumé, that's oak-aged Ortega, is it?
No, it's Bacchus and Reichensteiner. So okay. Reichensteiner is a very much a German sounding name. So it's 60-40% of those two grapes. It's very well received in the market. It's stocked by prestigious companies like Berry Brothers, who've been in business for well over 100 years. So yep. It's not Joe Novak, nor even William the winemaker, who are saying that it's good wine. It's companies like that who are saying that they are excellent wines.
You said there's a couple of business modules in Wickham.
Yes, there's four, if you like, distinct businesses. There's Wickham Vineyards producing the wines, as I've just explained. There's another company called Wine Share, which is a wine club. And we run, we have five vineyards. We sell direct from the vineyard to wine aficionados or people who just love wines. And we run events for people. We had the Institute of Directors over last night. We have the winemaker coming over, and we've got another interesting South African winemaker coming on the 27th of May, and he's a transformational speaker called Bertie Jones. It's a club that where people who love wine can come, meet, have fun, and also go to Calais and buy the wines free of English duty, which is high and rising at the moment, as
so
you know.
So you have your wines in France?
Yes, you can buy the...
I like that, you're exporting wine to France.
No, what we do, well, absolutely, I mean, almost in a way. As I say, it's a platform of five vineyards, so three are from France, one from England, and one in Italy as well. So all the wines that we sell through Wineshare can be bought at Calais, and that is free of English duty. So anyone who's out there from England who wants to join Wineshare, we've actually got a trip going over there this weekend for people to pick up their supplies of wines.
Okay, so who owns the vineyards?
It's a private individual who owns all these businesses. So that's two of the businesses. Another one is a vineyard in Bordeaux called Grand Main in the Côte de Jura, and that also forms one of the platform of the five vineyards that I was talking about. And then in addition, I know we're going to come on to that later, is the acquisition of the Thresher, 14 of the Thresher shops.
Okay, so... where are the vineyards dotted?
Yeah, so Wickham is obviously in Hampshire.
Bordeaux.
There's one in Bordeaux, and then there are the other vineyards, which we don't own, but we sell their wines through the club.
Oh, okay.
There's one in Italy, in Tuscany, one in called Pisay in Beaujolais, and one in Pietermaritzburg country in Provence, in the Côte de Luberon.
Oh, okay.
So you've got a platform of, you know, a selection of if you like, five varied vineyards, varied wines, and excellent wines. They are superb wines, which you wouldn't buy or couldn't buy through supermarkets in the UK.
Okay, that makes sense.
Yeah, it's a great club. And as I say, we run all these events. So people get together, they network. We have great fun. As I say, we had people down at the vineyard because we have a fantastic tasting room there. And we had a great evening with almost 50 people.
How many people in the club?
Oh, we've got it runs in the thousands, and we're growing. We target, an age range of around the sort of 45 to the age that people want to carry on drinking until.
Yeah, sure.
Many,
45 plus.
45 plus, absolutely.
Okay, and do you sell all your wines or all five of those wines at Wickham Vineyards itself?
Currently, we're selling, through Wineshare, obviously, at Wickham. You can the two points, you can buy them from Calais or from Wickham Vineyard. But if you buy them from Wickham Vineyard, they're also obviously going to be inclusive of UK duty. So, yes, you can pick them up from there. And then we supply them, those wines, to our customers in England. We personalise the wines, the labels. So if you want to make a special gift to someone, then you can have, you know, your wine say, happy birthday, Auntie Sally, or whatever you want to say. We've got some fantastic labels of past people who've had some very creative ideas in the way they want to.
Can you do that for the other wines from Bordeaux as well?
Yes, for all those Wineshare wines, they can all be personalised, and the Wickham wines.
I remember
as well.
That. We get asked occasionally from time to time whether we can supply wine like that, and we just said, no, not interested.
Yes.
But for weddings and things like that,
absolutely.
Good volume.
Beautiful idea.
But let's crack on. One of the reasons I was quite interested talking to you was as Thresher's dissolved itself.
Sure.
You guys snappled up a few of the stores down south. Why?
Well, an opportunity arose. We specifically chose the shops that were around the Hampshire area because obviously we can more easily manage the supply into those shops from the Wickham Vineyard if we're logistically around the Hampshire area. So there is one actually in Dorset and then in two very close to London, sort of Fleet and Odiham. So all those 14 shops are supplied or sourced from the Wickham Vineyard in the sense that obviously we have Wickham wines in there, but in addition we have from a myriad of different locations all around the world. We're trying to supply wines which, again, customers wouldn't really get in your Tesco's and your Sainsbury's. So we're trying to essentially bring good quality wines at a fair price to our customers out in Hampshire.
And I presume you're pushing those five key wines that you bring in anyway for your wine club?
We're not supplying all the five wine share wines into those. But the two wines that in particular I will promote will be the Wickham wines, which is one of the wines that we own and control, and the business I was explaining to you with regard to Bordeaux, those wines are in there. If you like our equity wines.
Sure. And everything else is what, just bought through wholesalers?
Is bought either direct from the vineyard, ex-cellar, and obviously with the 14 shops, we have a reasonable buying power. So we become an interesting buyer to vineyards themselves, so we can buy direct. And of course, yes, from time to time, we'll go through other agents and resellers.
Why did you take on the vineyards? Because you've got a nice, wee viable business. Why have the whole hassle of supplying, especially in England where margins are razor thin and it's not always the best business to be in?
Yes. We saw that we could add value where Threshers didn't, in the sense that they had made some marketing mistakes. And I think we're able, with a smaller select number of shops around a specific area, to ensure that we can essentially make that a much more viable business than Threshers certainly did. And we see it also as an opportunity of growing the business.
Is it mainly to sell Wickham wines, or is it to really branch out?
We obviously couldn't just sell Wickham wines through those shops. So there's many, many, many other wines and spirits and other items as well, including cigarettes, which are sold through those shops. So there's a range of products that customers want that we're selling.
Is it to diversify your business then? Or,
well, yes. I mean, to that extent, yes. It's a way of growing the business, essentially. I mean, you can look at it in a more sort of commercial sense. That, of course, it's an integrated value chain. So we have the supply, yes, with Wickham and Bordeaux. We have a winery, both in France and in Wickham, and then we have the market outlets. But as I said, we're supplying quality wines sometimes direct from the vineyards to customers that wouldn't necessarily be able to get hold of those wines. But of course, we've got many different types of customers in Hampshire, and you will find some of the more popular brands as well in those shops, because that's what the customers want. And of course, we're going to supply those to customers.
A lot of UK vineyards don't sell normally through outlets. Maybe they might, if they're big, they might do a deal with Waitrose or Sainsbury's. A lot of them try and position themselves in the restaurant trade. Do you think you're not cutting off your nose a wee bit? Because normally a restaurant won't take a wine that's in the high street, or they try not to. So do you find that you're getting pushback from restaurants now that your wines are generally available?
I think there's been a degree of interest because of this market move that we've made. And in fact, I think Wickham Wines has benefited hugely from the publicity that we've had. And it's actually made us a little bit more popular because of the activity that we've made. Sometimes one deal begets another deal. An activity or a transaction or an event makes other people sit up and take notice and think, oh, Wickham Wines, look what they've done. Yes, we do want to stock them. And wow, are they brilliant wines. I just had some people trying our wines just this morning, and they're saying, wow, the red's fantastic. And we're not known, the British people are not known as for making absolutely superb red wines, but our red is fantastic. So I think the reverse.
Okay. I spoke to a couple of people who took over some Threshers stores, not on the show, just privately, and some of them got a bit screwed by the receivers in that they landed up paying quite a margin over just to get access to the old stores.
because you bought 14 stores, did you get a bargain?
Did we get a bargain? I don't think there's anything, any such thing as a bargain. I'm not going to comment particularly on the acquisition because I do not know who's necessarily out there, and I've sort of been a fairly long and tooth in many other commercial enterprises, and probably I think I'll pass on that one if I may. But you know, a fair price was given, a market price was given at that time.
In Calais, when you're selling your wine in Calais, do you supply it to one of the stores in Calais to resell, or do you own a store in Calais yourself?
No, we have our own space actually in the warehouse in Calais, and so we've got space there, and so we bring, you know, after each vintage, we'll bring an amount of volume and bottles from each of those vineyards that I was explaining about, and that's actually at Calais, and then customers can come and collect during the course of the year.
Do they have to buy a case of a wine, or is it?
Yeah, yes. Oh, yeah, they have to buy a case of wine. We typically don't do mixed cases there either. That's a bit tricky for us. But yes, we have customers who will come and buy 20, 30, 40 cases of wine.
There's quite a bit of plonk.
Yeah, absolutely. But again, the price is very competitive, and they can have it all personalised, and you know, it works
even
really, really
in
well.
Calais.
Yeah, I can do that.
How do you do that?
We have it all set up basically by a certain date in March, mid-March. They tell us all their personalization requirements. I can ensure then, but you know, that it's bottled and then delivered into Calais and ready for their collection at any point in time going forward.
So it's actually done before it gets Absolutely. To Calais. I was thinking a lot of warehouses, they're hard enough to get them just to pick a case, let alone get them to change some labels.
So that's all done. So it's quite an exercise. So there's a bunch of activities going on at Wickham. In addition, at Wickham, we've got a fantastic restaurant, the Vatica restaurant, which is Atul Kochhar's sister restaurant. He has a Michelin star in Benares in Berkeley Square. And his sister restaurant is down at Wickham with us. So as I say, that's between Southampton and Portsmouth. And so you can come and have a great meal there. And sometimes we run through Wineshare and Wickham fantastic black tie event. And it's fantastic, excellent food, and we'll have a platform of wines that we'll match with the food. And we ran in conjunction with Vatica a charity bash for UNICEF, mm-hmm. September of last year. And I have to say, a vineyard is a magical place with a marquee. It almost looked like a perfect wedding setting.
Yeah, no, I'm sure it is. There's a lot of people who want to get married in vineyards.
Yes,
do you do weddings?
Yes, we do. Yes, so you can get a marquee, and we have a selected area in the vineyard, and we, you know, obviously we have the wines available as well, and we can run forward with that. And several people have booked.
Okay, brilliant. I think we'll wrap it up there, Jo. Thank you very much for your time.
All right, thank you. Thank you, Chris.
Hope you enjoyed that interview with Jo. Lovely lady. Okay, almost ready to finish up with the show. And this week, our mystery grape variety was Gewürztraminer. Now, I rang a tasting yesterday on Thursday night, and one of the people at the tasting, the guy I actually booked, listens to the show, a guy called Mike. Thank you very much, Mike. He suggested that it's quite good to get a summary after you know the grape variety, because that way you can help sort of remember what these things are. So I'm just going to give you a brief summary of Gewürztraminer. Probably the key things for me are that high alcohols, low acidity. So that's definitely a hallmark. And the rose petal lychee type smell. For me, some of the more extreme versions smell more like Turkish Delight. Not a big fan of Turkish Delight, so I actually don't like the aroma of Gewürztraminer too much. Very common around the world. And just to finish up, we've got our quote now. Now, it's not so much a quote as a poem. I'm not quite sure where it comes from, but it was quite a nice poem, so I thought I'd give it to you as our quote. So here it is. "'Twas an evening in November, as well I remember. I was strolling down the street in a drunken pride, but my knees were all aflutter, so I landed in the gutter. A pig came and laid down by my side. Yes, I lay in the gutter, thinking thoughts I could not utter, when a maiden passing so softly says, 'You can tell a man that boozes by the company that he chooses.' And at that, the pig got up and walked away. Until next week, cheers and good drinking."
The UK Wine Show is a weekly podcast brought to you by 3050, the wine tasting company. The show is produced by Chris Scott and the news is read by Jane Scott. To listen to other shows, visit ukwineshow.co.uk. Thank you for listening.